this series with my colleague Peggy Wright, wandering around in the back with assistance from our webmaster and taking photographs, Hai Wong Wan, our reference coordinator, Brian Carson, at the back, and David Runner is our technology coordinator. Our speaker tonight is a medievalist who received his PhD in English from Auburn University for his work on 15th century writer William Caxton and joined the faculty at Western in 1972. And research interests have focused on Chaucer and Dante, and from 1979 until 1984, he served as department head for the English department. During his tenure, the English Honors Program was established and a writing minor developed. In 1984, with Joe Glazer, his widely used Writer's Handbook was published in New York by Macmillan and Company. In the 1980s, along with several other English faculty, he began teaching a number of literature classes abroad in England and Ireland before it was really fashionable at Western to do so. And since 1981, he's taught or led study abroad courses on 15 different occasions to England, Ireland, and Italy. A dedicated public servant, in 1984-1985, he won university-wide public service award, and in 1999 won the Potter College Award for public service. During the 1990s, he became affectionately known as Western's planning guru, and we all dealt with him, as an assistant to the provost. Most recently, in 2005-2006, he served as the traditions professor of English and is currently researching a project on Chaucer biographies. In the summer of 2006, he taught a summer term course in Dublin and Galway on the topic Irish literature, poetry, politics, and protest, which is the theme of tonight's talk. To quote his department head, he's a modest man of considerable talents. Please welcome Jim Flint.
Playwright in Ireland, and Goes back to one of the early documents, in this case, the Bible. towers and other structures somewhat exited. Now that was leaning, but I think it was the photographer who was leaning at that point. It's not the leaning tower of Lindelof. We're not finding a new archaeological entity there. But in any event, Lindelof has these wonderful stone structures, probably built between the 9th and 12th century, as a matter of fact. And when we were walking around, and I'm sorry, Connie, we met Connie and Tom Foster. We didn't even know they were in Ireland, and there they were walking around Lindelof on the same day we were. And I've got a picture that actually Tom took us, and I don't have it here, so I'm sorry. But it was wonderful, one of those small world events, you know, where you meet someone you know out traveling in the middle of another country. I threw this one in. Obviously, it's got the Celtic cross, but also because of these guys. I love the Irish guys. They come on with a great deal of passion. They want to share their culture with you. And there's a more of a mission in the way. And this guy, he's got that serious look. By gosh, you better listen to what I'm telling you here about this site here. So it's wonderful to see that quite often touring around Ireland. I put this one in, moving from the medieval monastic religious past, because Ireland prides itself, it has been for many years, an island given over to religious thought. It used to style itself as the home of saints and scholars, I think, is was a line given to it. But we're often quite surprised walking down the street to find little religious icons or shrines, and here's one to the Virgin Mary, quite a large one actually, that was being lit up at night, and it's right across from our hotel, south of Cork, where we were staying there. So that's all part of this culture that you get in. You might be walking down the street in Dublin, and there's a shrine to the Sacred Heart of Jesus. They love that. They love that shrine. It shows up again and again and again. Here's a woman I picked up on the street. No, it's my wife, Lana. In Dublin, just showing you a little bit there. She's on the Haypenny Bridge, a pedestrian bridge called the Haypenny Bridge because, of course, at one time it cost half a penny, to cross that pedestrian bridge. But there's over the River Liffey, running right through the middle of Dublin. And one thing about the picture, just looking at it again, reminds me not to go off on the Celtic Tiger. But I've been going to Dublin since the early 1980s. That's a long time. When I first went there, the place was pretty shabby in lots of ways. They would have big timbers holding up buildings, kid you not. And you can see the evidence of the newfound economic renaissance there. The Celtic Tiger and shows up somewhat in this picture as well. We walk around the local sites. St. Stephen's Green is a famous local site, park there, and so we observe the local people as well. This is an Irish good old boy. This is all we can figure out. We have no idea. Nobody had the nerve to go ask him, you know, the meaning of his shirt, but in any event, there he was. We did the other touristy things. I had to throw this one in. I like this picture because that's, of course, John and Sandy Peterson. John was the director of our program. There were four classes being taught there together, and John went along as the director of our program. John's a faculty member, administrator at Western, and so he directed us, and Sandy directed John. I like it because that is Blarney Castle rising out of their umbrella. And you have to go to Blarney Castle, and there it is in all its splendor and its glory, looking very scenic, and I've decided that's what Blarney Castle is, because what do they do at Blarney Castle? They line you up, they make you climb to the top of it, and then there are the tourists, who are walking through ready to kiss the Blarney Stone. And I was, where did I pay? Anyway, but you've got to do it. And my students made fun of me because I thought, I'm not going to do that. But of course, I did. And it's very high up there. I put this one in. noting, and there may be others, one is that I'm being held tight so that I don't fall to my certain doom down in that crack. Because there's just a hole down there, down those several stories to the bottom. And that guy is there expecting a tip to hold you. And the other thing is, this is a vault picture, of course, because it says, kissing the Blarney Stone, because there's a photographer there, ready to take, to record this timeless moment and charge you an appropriate price for it. But there I am doing that, which we all have to do. A few other, more in the touristy line, the Cliffs of Moher, M-O-H-E-R, over on the west coast. These huge cliffs, that's the Atlantic Ocean banging up against it, and it is a truly dramatic landscape. This too is kind of being made more tourist friendly. I've been going there for several years, been there several times, where we used to just pull up the side of the road and hike out to the end. Now there's a huge parking structure, now it's all an underground subway to walk to it. It's all, you know, pretty soon you won't have to go there at all. They'll just deliver the picture of you in front of it or something. But it is a beautiful sight. It's worth a visit. Bruno Boyne, the Boyne Valley, the Battle of the Boynes, some people know that, the River Boyne. But you see here, more and more these days, this is one of the things we really noticed, didn't we, students, that the Irish nomenclature, the Irish spelling is coming back and making its appearance. The Boyne, the Bruno Boyne, is the site of these Neolithic package tombs. These huge mounds were built before the pyramids. Not quite as impressive as the pyramids, but nonetheless, great antiquity. Lots of things to say about that. One is that on those rocks, these huge stones around there, is where the most famous one of these is called Newgrange. We went to the one called Knauf, which is also nice. That's where they get all these. This is why I wore my T-shirt here, because of the swirling pattern that you would see that time and time again on those boulders. So it's some sort of taken by the Irish as a basic Celtic design. It speaks to their soul in ways, and so it shows up in all sorts of ways on these boulders. It's really wonderful. It was the wettest day I've ever been in touring, and some of you students would remember that. I like that because it captures the sense of how wet it was. There's an Irish guide out in front, and she was nothing daunted. She yelled into the storm, and in fact, yelled at us if we didn't listen enough, right, as I recall. But in any event, she was going to, again, had that passion about her to share this. However, after the rain comes the rainbow, and there we are going back. This is where we live. It's the rainbow. You can't quite see. It's a little bit light in here, a little bit. But we stayed in Dublin at this particular location, just outside of Dublin. Very nice. A little bit far from the central city. But I was thinking about rainbows. We saw several rainbows in Ireland. It reminded me why the leprechaun with the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is so basic to their mythology, because they see rainbows a lot. The class again, we finally got busy and decided to do some literary stuff, and we're on the streets of Dublin here with James Joyce, as you see. In our class, I like this class for several reasons. After all the rain, they're so overawed by the sun that their eyes are closed. You notice that all the girls there, oh, sun, they can't take it, you know. It's been that Irish overcast for a while, but we've come out like gophers out of their hole. And it was a wonderful day, as I recall, although it was still breezy. Gives me a chance to talk about James Joyce. This guy, he's up there on the wall. I thought sure he was over there, but I don't see him elsewhere. A few things about James Joyce. We didn't cover his major work. One that's listed over there is Ulysses, the work for which he is famous, and why he is often thought of as probably the most influential novelist of the 20th century, at least in English. I know at the end of the century, they did all these lists, top 100, what was it, what's the top, you know, they did the top novels, and every survey that they did, short version, with our theme about politics is because Joy said, to hell with politics, I'm leaving. He was in Ireland, and he's got a quote. I have to make sure I get this right, because this copy's down. He wrote a semi-autobiographical work called A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man. And in that, he has a character named Stephen Dedalus, who's kind of his alter ego. And Stephen says this, famous quote, Ireland is the old sow that eats her farrow. Ireland is the old sow that eats her farrow. And Joyce did. He chafed against what he saw as the repression of Ireland. And early on, in fact, in 1904, he got out of Ireland, moved to Europe, and wrote many of his great works in Europe. But he wrote always about Dublin. Dublin was in his imagination, in a famous collection of short stories. We did read some of those, Dubliners, and then the autobiographical work, and then, of course, Ulysses itself. You can't miss Joyce going around Dublin because there are all these Ulysses walks around the street. You'll be walking along, and then the pavement will be a brass. And the brass will look like this. And it's got Ulysses at the top, you know, so that we all know that's what it's about. And it's got Mr. Bloom quickly breathing something, walking past Adam Corp. And I guess this is Mr. Bloom. Leopold Bloom is the protagonist of Ulysses. And as if you read that work or know of it, it's about one day in the life of Leopold Bloom walking around the streets of Dublin. Huge, yes, and complex. This happens on June 16th, 1904. Thus, it's June 16th has ever since been observed as Bloom's Day in Dublin and elsewhere. So you'll see these evidences of Joyce's work. And what's funny to me is that for many years, he left with a cloud over his head of various types. He met a girl, Nora Barnacle, and they had run away together without sanction of marriage. So this had scandalized his family, her family, and he was rejecting, really, much of what Ireland, as he understood it, had to stand for at that time. And so people in Ireland for a long time did not like James Joyce. And now he's the hometown boy made good. He's everywhere. And it's very interesting. We did see another place, a place associated with Joyce. Here's the class on the way out there to that spot. This is Joyce's Tower on the south side of Dublin, on the coast there. The tower is a Martello Tower, built in the early 19th century. And one of Joyce's friends rented that tower. They were no longer used for, you know, any military purposes by around the turn of the century, around the 20th century. And so this friend of his rented it, and Joyce went to live there, stayed there for six or seven days, not long. And there was one guy, what's the story they told us? There was a guy who was spending the night there who had a bad dream and got up in the middle of the night and started shooting a gun just wildly and almost shot Joyce. He gathered his kit together and walked back to Dublin right that morning, but he got out of there. But it is now a very nice museum, Joyce Museum, and worth a visit from that alone. And by the way, the opening scene in Ulysses is set in this tower. Close by there is the 40-foot, the gentleman's bathing place. Doesn't that bring back certain memories of how things used to be? Now they're run by the Sandy Cove Bathers Association, and at one time it was only for gentlemen, therefore togs did not need to be worn, but now it has been integrated, and so togs must be worn. And people, in fact, were swimming there the day we were there. It's very chilly, very breezy. This is right down from that Martello Tower there in the bay, and you see people swimming about, enjoy themselves quite a lot. One last spot that we went to associated with James Joyce is the Nora Barnacle House Museum. It's at that out to Europe as well, as a matter of fact. We did do official sorts of things. We went to the Dublin Writers Museum that has all kinds of displays about writers. Here's the class ready to hear a lecture, performance lecture is what it amounted to, by a person who came there to the museum. They've got busts and pictures and all sorts of displays about Irish writers there. We were getting ready to do that. It was a very, very good lecture we had there, indeed. That's a little vague. Can you read it? We also tried to pick up a literary. You have to pick it up wherever you can. So we did go on the Dublin Literary Pub Crawl. Now that one you can barely see it there, but most of us went. I'm not sure, Tracy, you were feeling well enough that night. But in any event, did she go? Okay.
Crawl.
We did crawl.
Due to the problem of the recording device, Professor Jim Flynn's lecture is cut short here. We apologize to him and to the organizers of the event, and to you, our audience.